Welcome to the Note to Scene podcast. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And every week we chronicle the biggest news in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. Big news this week from Paramore and Blink-182. But first, we're going to talk about Ronnie Radke and Falling in Reverse, who are back with a wild new song. Let's go. So, yesterday or the other day was the last official day to buy CDs at Best Buy. I mean, that's it, right?
Yeah, dude. End of an era.
It used to be half the goddamn store was stacked with CDs. Remember
the old days? First thing you saw when you walk in were CD racks, man. I can't tell you how many CDs I bought from Best Buy growing up. Mm-hmm. Like hundreds.
Yeah, easily. I had some friends who like waited in line for the Yellow Card album, paper walls. There were people that like, I don't know if that was a Best Buy exclusive or something, but I knew people who went to Best Buy to wait for that one. Cause you know, that had been a big deal for the band. You know, they had been gone for a while. It was kind of a comeback album.
And with, you know, that's popped into my head, that experience of going out and waiting for an album in line at a store or outside a store at midnight for it to drop. Like, future generations just aren't gonna have that. It's just gonna be a pastime. It'll be like, what, you really did that? Like, that was real? It's crazy, man.
But now it's just like, with the convenience of Spotify,
you don't need
just, it just seems insane to go buy a CD.
Absolutely.
It's such a pain in the ass. I mean, I did it for the T-Swift record because it was fun and it was more of, you know, a physical media experience, but mm-hmm. I just don't see myself doing it another time. And now, what's the rumor? Target is supposed to be next.
Target's next, allegedly, supposedly, reportedly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Walmart will. I mean, will probably, their CD section is so small. They've got to be soon to go.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, they're just not bringing in the money like they used to, man. And it makes sense. Streaming has made consuming music so much more convenient. Like,
and I'm not sad about this. Like, I don't care. And I know I didn't have as much of an attachment to CDs as you did. Like, I was, as soon as like Napster happened, I was like, later.
Oh,
you know, so
no.
As 2001, I was done with CDs. You know, I've always been about this digital life. But
I know, man. Back home, I got fucking.
Do you have any actual sadness like from this
yeah,
era coming,
dude,
to
it? Like, that's my childhood. Back in my room back home, I've got like, you know, 500-600 CDs laying around. Like, that's my collection. I don't collect vinyl. I don't do that, you know. Like, CDs are my thing. And
you gotta recycle all that plastic,
dude. Now, you know, I'm still searching through like dollar bins and shit looking for old like scene releases. It's just, I think I'm just always gonna be that way. But it bums me out, just like, not that I go to Best Buy to buy CDs, but just the concept of CDs ending and we're watching it unfold right in front of our eyes. It hurts, man. Like, that's my childhood.
I'm sorry for your childhood, man. But I'm one of those assholes who just was full into Spotify. Full, just take me into the world. Now I was like, plug me into the Matrix. It's so damn convenient. I love it, man. Okay, so Code Orange, a band that we have ripped to shreds on this podcast many times, and we've taken many issues with this band. They put out this song called The Hunt, and it features Corey Taylor of Slipknot, and the song fucking rips.
Absolutely, man. It slays. It's a banger. Like, banger nation, man. Sound
Dude,
the alarm.
I mean, and this thing is like, you know, we talk shit about a lot of bands on this podcast, and you know, we get emails from listeners who say like, oh, you shit on everything I love, you hate everything I like, and we don't like hold grudges against bands. We don't hate bands. We just, when we hear shitty music, we call it out, you
exactly.
know. And a good example of it is like, you know, Knucklepuck. We were tearing that band to shreds. You know, we really didn't like new music, but you know, we saw them play at Warped Tour, and we saw them give a good performance, and we're like, fuck yeah, like, you know, these guys, they had a good show. And it actually, like, made me reconsider that song, Want Me Around, after seeing it played live, and I hit that check mark on Spotify.
Oh,
and
I'm like, man.
And I think when we initially were reviewing it, that was my favorite of the Knuckleplex singles, because mm-hmm. it's basically a Third Eye Blind ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so, you know, we are perfectly capable of admitting, you know, when a band puts out good music. It's yeah, not like, it's not like a grudge thing for us. Like, because I really fucking hated this band, and I was surprised to like this. But, you know, as soon as that trembling instrumentation just like thunders in, I was just like, holy shit, man. And you got that chorus, which is that riff almost, it's like almost kind of horrorcore in a way. Like,
totally. It's almost theatrical. Yeah.
You could almost see it in a Rob Zombie film, you
yep,
know?
Yep.
And Corey Taylor's screaming verse is just disgusting. It's so good.
It reminds me of old school Slipknot. You
straight
know?
Up.
He comes in. It's so just, it's vicious. It's vile, yeah. man. Like, you can feel that anger. That anger is palpable in his voice. But, like, I saw this band about two weeks ago, a week and a half ago. Now, shouts to Vane. They open. They're killing it. They just did 2,900 first week on a completely independent no-name label. That band's going to be a thing. But, you know, seeing this band's live show, because the last time I saw them was in 2014 at, like, this closet venue. It's like 150 cap in Chicago, and back when they were still called Code Orange Kids. And to see their show now, like, it's almost like a horror movie, you know? And, like, I don't like any of the last two records. I think they're just ripping off Norma Jean, and I can't stand this band's elitist attitude and their whole kind of narrative that they convey. But when a band makes bangers, we admit it. Like, just look at the Water Parks record. Like,
yeah,
we shat on that record so much. Or that band so much. And then we admitted that the record was good because it was good. And same with this song.
We had a lot of issues with Water Parks. And when the record came out, we were like, hey, we like this. But you're right about the Corey Taylor thing. It does sound like old Slipknot. Like, yo, if you are a Slipknot fan, you got to hear this song just because this is just like self-titled vibes. It's like Wait and Bleed vibes.
Absolutely,
it's
dude.
Totally the old Corey Taylor.
You
have not heard this version of Corey Taylor in a very long time. That's my thing. This song, it's structured more.
Sure.
And there's a chorus, even though the guitar is really driving the chorus, there's like a chorus to it, and it's more structured. And I think if the band could continue down this road, they might actually be able to do something, because these last two records have just been failures. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not selling anything. They're getting critical love for some reason, you know? And but if they keep doing this, they might...
I looked up an interesting stat today. This their last album has sold 16,000 copies on the cycle. It's been out for a little over a year right now.
So State Champs just sold more than that
in
their first
week, right?
To give you comparative.
Yeah.
And this is Code Orange is a band that's like getting Revolver covers and shit. You know what I mean?
Dude,
they're getting
on
like
a major
metal?
Label. They're on a major label, and a band. For our listeners who are into the underground heavy shit right now, there's a band called Power Trip, complete no name. They're on Southern Lord Records, independent, like they have no backing. They released an album just a little while before Code Orange released their last album, and that album has sold 23,000 copies on its cycle. So, like, Code Orange on a major label getting outsold by pretty much completely independent bands.
The band, and I don't want to talk too much about Code Orange, but the band have been failing, but seeing this song, I think both you and I agree, like, we finally see some potential here. And, you know, I don't know if that's maybe the label. Obviously, Roadrunner, you know, Slipknot and Code Orange share a record label, so that probably helped with the connection. But, you know, I don't know if somebody's taking the reins with the band, but this is a good direction for them to go in, is this
Absolutely.
Kind of music.
Absolutely. We'll see.
All right. Let's do a listener question. Listener Phil D writes into notescene@gmail.com. Phil says, I just listened to your guys' podcast on brand new science fiction, and it was an amazing breakdown of the album. I have been a brand new fan for quite some time and love Devil and God and Daisy, but I am having trouble getting into science fiction after hearing about Jesse's extracurricular activities. Every time I turn on science fiction or other brand new albums, I just am haunted by the feeling that I shouldn't be listening to them. A tough pill to swallow. I am curious to know if you guys have thought through stuff like this. I can only imagine that most bands I hold dear have dark skeletons in their tour buses. I know several of my favorites, Under Oath and Linkin Park, got into drug addiction pretty heavily, but it doesn't seem to have the same effect on my enjoyment of the music. Thank you for your podcast. I never thought I would be listening to a whole podcast about Lil Peep. Phil. Good ending there.
That is awesome.
We broke down Brand New Science Fiction, and I'd recommend you go listen to that episode if you haven't. That's probably one of my personal favorite episodes we did, just because, you know, we got to dedicate an entire episode to one album. And
it was that important.
Right. It was an 8-year wait. And oh boy, Phil, you got to put us on the spot here. I mean, this is the $1 million question, right? Isn't it? This is one of the hardest. It's a hard question to answer because, you know, when these allegations came out against Jesse, I mean, it was like highs and lows. Like, right, the record that came out, it was everything we wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. We were so stoked. And then these allegations come out against Jesse, and you and I were just like, fuck, like, what do we do now, you know? And it was hard to know, like, how to deal with it. Like, from my perspective, that was my favorite record of 2017.
Same.
But at the time, I was so shell-shocked that I wasn't telling people that. You know what I mean? Like, the mm-hmm. immediate thing was like, oh, I have to cancel that as
right.
my favorite record.
Right.
I was lucky enough that I liked the Lord record enough that year that I was able to just bump Lord up and say, you know, Lord was my favorite record. But there was a sort of, I did sort of back down from the record at first. And my position has changed over time, but, you know, initially, what was that like for you, Tyler?
Yeah, I did the exact same thing. Like, you gotta separate yourself from it. And honestly, like, I went a good 5, you know, that broke in November. I went a good 5-6 months before I touched anything Brand New again.
I remember at first you were more out than I was. Like,
yeah.
You were just like done, I remember. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm kind of done, but I don't know. And it's been an interesting transition.
Yeah, it was a very knee-jerk reaction for me, and I know a lot of other people. And it's difficult, like, I don't have an answer to this question. I can only speak from what I've gone through personally. I think this is a decision that everyone has to make on their own when it comes to these types of things. To address your question as a whole, Phil, you know, I definitely think there's a difference between what Jesse allegedly did and drug use from other bands. I think, like, those are completely, completely different things and completely different situations. But as far as Jesse's situation, I started revisiting the album here and there about a month ago, and I'm just at a point right now where, you know, I listen to it, I can't get it out of my head either. It's not something I can just put on and not think about what happened, the social implications that come along with listening to music by Brand New now. I think there should be something to say about the other three members in the band that helped mm-hmm. create that record. And on the other hand, like, why does the world get Bowie, but I can't have Brand New?
Exactly.
You know, like, there's that conversation needs to be had, and there's double standards everywhere you look. And
for context to what Tyler said, David mm-hmm. Bowie did, if you can read into the stuff that David Bowie did, but it'd be pretty easy to say what David Bowie did was far, far worse than what Jesse Lacey did. And yet, you know, David Bowie is celebrated by rock critics around the world.
He gets
Grammys. He got a Grammy for Black Star, you know,
right.
and we can't listen to Brand New. And it's not that I'm mad about that. It's just, I guess compared to other people, when the news hit about Jesse,
mm-hmm.
I was a lot less surprised, I think, than other people, because having worked in the industry and the position I was in,
mm-hmm.
I was privy to some information about Jesse, and I had known about some pretty terrible things he had done for a while. So when I heard this, I was kind of like, sounds like the kind of dude, you know, I've been hearing about. I wasn't as shocked. You know, I certainly felt bad for the victim, but it didn't surprise me. Shit, dude, you take away any kind of industry knowledge, listening to this guy's lyrics, you know, what he's been writing about since,
oh, hell
you know,
yeah.
the first record.
Me versus just, Elvis, right. man. Like,
true.
Dude.
And that song and just his general the psychosis you hear yeah. in the songs. He's a
dude,
sick man.
Handcuffs?
You know?
Like, get the fuck yeah. out of here, man. Shit's
so,
fucked up.
I was just less surprised, but I did. I was like, you know what? The right thing to do is to just take some distance from the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I ultimately have. Like, I didn't blackball them, but, you know, I do listen to the record every now and then, Science Fiction. And the thing about Deja and your favorite weapon is, like, look, you're just never going to take that away from me. Like, that was my teen. Mm-hmm. Those were my teenage years, you know? I was listening to Deja. Like, that, no matter, he could do anything. I don't know that you can just take those memories away. I'm sure there's a limit there, but the legacy of the band and just, I mean, I was a teenager growing up with their music. I just, yeah. I don't think that those songs will ever lose the meaning that they had to me, you know, whether it was 70 times 7 or Tommy Gun, which is a song that I clutched to my chest throughout my teenage years, you know,
mm-hmm.
or Devil and God, which is, you know, an album that spiritually awoken me when I was in college. You know, it's they're just things you can't just let go that easily, I guess, is my point. And to each his own. It's ultimately your decision. I don't feel like I'm outwardly supporting Jesse, you know, by listening to those records, but it's a tricky thing. It really is.
Yeah, it's so hard to navigate. And,
it is the hardest thing to navigate, and you're the littlest thing you say, we can get in so much trouble.
Right.
Damn
but...
you, Phil. But no, I mean, seriously, though, this is a good question. This
no,
is a good
it's
thing
something
to...
that we need to discuss, because at the end of the day, anyone who's a brand new fan has thought about this and has
right.
dealt with this.
You know,
and...
what I've seen is, as a member of some brand new, like, fan groups online, mm-hmm. it's simmered down.
Oh,
like the
absolutely.
It's generally, people have generally moved on. Like, brand new fans, there was outrage at first, but most brand new fans have kind of just settled back into that what's the best brand new record conversation, you know what I mean? It seems like we've moved towards more of a peacetime.
Yeah, and
now,
for what it's worth, you know, like, from just being a messenger here, people haven't stopped buying physical copies of Science Fiction. Like, they've been moving units ever since this happened.
I mean, it's a really great record. Like I said, probably the best record of 2017. It lived up to everything it needed to be.
We could go deep, man. We could do a whole nother episode on just this.
We could. But we thank Phil for mm-hmm. writing in to notetoscene@gmail.com. If you have any questions for the show, feel free to send them in, and we will happily discuss them. But we got to move on, Tyler, to lighter topics.
Here we go.
Funner mode. Let's
Here
go.
We go.
Let's move on.
Shifting gears
out of that brand new conversation. Okay, so Falling in Reverse, Ronnie Radke and Co. are back again. They released a new song and a video for Losing My Life following the successful standalone single Losing My Mind. These are some unexpected singles we got pretty quickly in the wake of the band's album Coming Home. What was your first reaction to hearing this T-Sharp, Losing My Life? How do you feel about this track?
So coming off of the last single, Losing My Mind, it makes sense. But if you look at it in the context compared to Coming Home as an album, this doesn't feel right. This song is very kind of, you know, typical Ronnie ADD core. He's rapping in the verses, and then once you get to the chorus, it's this big kind of anthemic feel to it. It really, like, honestly, this is just like, what, Alone Part 4 at this point?
Alone Part 3, I'd say.
Alone Part 3, Alone Part 4. I mean, B-sides to Coming Home were all of that. It's just Ronnie party core with big choruses. I like the chorus, man. Like, I think that hook is good. I struggle getting through the rest of the song, though. Like, this song is, it's
Ronnie
tough
writes good
at
hooks.
Points.
We've always known that.
He knows how to deliver there, but, like, the verses are a little, you know, I can sit through the verses. What really throws me, to the point where the first time I heard this, I couldn't help but laugh a little bit, was the breakdown. It's just so out of left field, so ridiculous, so chopped up, so unnecessary that it makes the song feel separated and disconnected and very dissonant as a listening experience. I want a more cohesive song. I appreciate that he's trying to push the envelope, but I think as a unit, this song misses because there's just too much that doesn't fit together. So for the chorus that gets stuck in my head, I'm gonna give it a 6.5 out of 10.
6.5 out of 10. Okay, so I was a big fan of Losing My Mind, which was this Lucy single that just dropped out of nowhere. You know, like, we had just got done, Coming Home was like out for what, a couple months, and then boom, like Losing My Mind hits, and it kind of it like reinvigorated the band in a way. Like, they had some more buzz going on, and it had a lot of success. It had a lot of YouTube views, a lot of streams.
7.2 million streams on YouTube.
Yeah, people were about it, and you know, despite Ronnie's rapping, which I think is the weakest part of the song, that chorus was just undeniable. And it's that, you know, it's that dramatic alone type of chorus that's very guitar driven. And you had a very like inspirational feel throughout the song. It was like a good like workout anthem in a funny way.
The bridge hits hard too in that song. Yeah. I really like the build up.
You came around to that one later.
I didn't like it at first.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to that episode. Tyler and I talk about it, and I was like, "Yo, my guys are back!"
And I was like, "No."
I was like not having it. But one day I get a text from this guy, and he's like, "Yo, dude, Fall Your Verse song, Banger Nation." But so this song, where do I start?
Oh man. Okay. So he's not outright out of the gates like he was Losing My Mind. What is it, Matt?
Okay, so here's the thing. It's like with these new songs, and especially this latest one, Losing My Life, he's trying to push the envelope, like you said, and I respect that, but it's like he's not pushing it far enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, you feel the elements of him wanting to like be kind of a SoundCloud rapper and maybe go more in that direction, but like this still sounds like a 2013 post-hardcore song at the same time.
Right.
It still feels too much like Falling in Reverse, you know, two records ago. And I'm just kind of like, it just feels kind of stagnant in that way. Like it just doesn't. I agree with you. The chorus is good. To put it in perspective, I don't like this nearly as much as Losing My Mind, the last single. I come in right with you, Tyler. I'm at a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. All right.
It just feels like he's not going all the way. I mean, he's doing the rapping thing. You know, he's got an interesting chorus, an interesting concept. But he's not really getting experimental enough. Like, seriously, you know what I mean? Like, let's see something crazy is at this point. If you're gonna change it up, let's actually make it risky. Let's actually make it, you know, fun. And that's ultimately why I was disappointed in this song.
Yeah, I feel like I understand what you're saying about him not pushing the envelope enough in terms of musical experimentation in realms that he hasn't been yet, but I feel like he is pushing the envelope. Like, he thinks he's really pushing the envelope.
Oh, he thinks he does, dude.
Like, he's getting it so hard in those verses, man.
Dude, when he got out of prison and he drops Alone, he thought he was the first one to put out Crunkcore. You know what I mean?
Right,
he thought, but he didn't realize, you know, it ended with Broken Side 3 years before that. You know, he thinks, it's funny, it's like his prison sentence has set him like 4 years behind everyone else.
Right.
So to him, he is. But it's just like interesting to think about what is this move, you know, with the band? Like, what are their career aspirations here?
Because I wanted to talk about that.
They have no problem busting a million views on YouTube. This song's already at 1.2 million views. So like, there's still interest there. And maybe that's just, you know, seeing Ronnie as a character in sort of his celebrity. But Coming Home came out, you know, did 19,000 copies first week or something around there. Was pretty successful record for the band when we thought they were over. And then they just kind of totally take a left turn from that and move towards this new sound, this new more electronic rapping sound with these singles. And it's like, what's going on here?
You know, it feels like regression, though. You know, they made a move. They win Angels and Airwaves core, and now they're back to Fashionably Late. There was a reason why the Fashionably Late songs on Coming Home were on the deluxe edition. Like, those two songs were on the bonus copy of the record because, like, they don't fit in that world.
I guess this does, you're right, this does feel like a regression in a way back to Fashionably Late, back to Alone core, but it's like they took in some newer elements with them. Like, I specifically say the electronics, you know, have improved slightly. And really what one of the most exciting parts about these two Lucys they've dropped have been the videos. Like, just the aesthetic change. Sure. You know, you've got, I mean, this video is wild. This looks really expensive. Like, this looks like a serious endeavor that the label is investing into the band. You know what I mean? This video has, the lights look crazy, the cinematography is great, Ronnie's shooting light beams out of his mouth, it's a very well shot and executed music video.
Yeah, there's a reason why the videos are outstreaming the Spotify track so much, you know, like this has 341,000 streams on Spotify, but it has 1.3 million views on YouTube.
You know, ever since Situations came out, Ronnie Ratch, you gotta watch the video. You know what I mean? He's the video guy. He's our video guy. Like, you gotta see his videos. I like the video, though. I mean, the random thing I like, you got Derek with just dead on his body armor. Right? The cap lock's like, dead.
What does that mean?
It's an interesting, like, this, like, Blade Runner mech warrior core look the band have going on. I like it.
So my question is that his kid? Is that actually his kid in the video? The little girl?
That's actually his daughter.
Wow. Okay. Yep. So has he ever brought her out into, like, you know, the spotlight before like that?
No, this is her. I mean, she might have been on stage once, but, like, this is her first time in any of his music videos.
Him and the ex
fiance, the baby mama. Mm-hmm. They were not on good terms for a very long time, but I think they're now they're just, like, back on, like, sort of, we're cordial again, you know? So he has more of his, like, visiting rights, and the mom was there during this shoot and everything.
She was
there during the music video shoot.
Yeah, because I feel like it hasn't really been part of Ronnie's narrative that he's been a father for a long time now. You know,
I mean, he talks about it a lot, but you just haven't seen it,
right? It has felt very separate unless you're a diehard Ronnie fan. So I thought that was interesting, but the kind of, like, anime look that he's got when he's got his shirt off and he's got those like baggy kind of sweats and the with the lasers behind him, and he's got so many different vibes going on in this video. And, like, there's the one shot of him, like, losing his soul, and, like, there's light coming out of his throat and his eyes and shit. Like,
very effective
this
shot.
Video goes everywhere,
it
dude.
Looks expensive, right?
It's totally,
like, that's my thing, is these look just like these random Lucy singles, but you don't spend that much money on a video unless you're gearing up towards something. And it's like, are we already gearing up towards another album? I mean, it's just, that would be insane after Coming Home came out.
I wish they would just focus on Ronnie, fade the band into the background. This has felt like, I know I always come back here, but this feels like after Coming Home and after all the drama with whatever his face was, the drummer, this feels like the most opportune moment to fade the rest of Falling in Reverse into the background. Ronnie is falling in reverse. We've known this for years now. That's what it is. So make him the guy. Make him the center point.
This comes back to my point about him not pushing the envelope far enough. And like you said, the band's still there. That's why this still sounds like 2013 Falling in Reverse to some respect, because you still got that band there doing that band thing. You know, like you said, if we drop the band and get Ronnie over some 808s with some auto-tune, who knows what happens? Man. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe there's another career there.
I think we need to do that, but the rule is he can't rap. He can't actually try to rap.
Well, yeah, the problem is his style of rapping.
Oh, my goodness.
He's more of a traditionalist, if you will.
Eminem, you know? Yes. Like, that's it.
He's not going for the in vogue rap of the moment, which is sort of mumble rap, sort of faded Xanax core rap. No. He is not touching that at all, which I'm surprised by, because, you know, he sees it, you know?
Absolutely. No, I could see him hating it, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, at the end of the video, you've got the two different Ronnies going to battle each other, and then the video cuts to the end. So, like, the next chapter's coming. It's going to be called Losing My What? Like, are we going to take bets
losing
on
my
what?
Soul or something.
Losing My Soul.
Yeah, losing my soul. And, you know, maybe we'll get a darker SoundCloud rap Ronnie.
Dude,
I don't know.
Just get, like, another like... Not Good Enough for Truth and Cliche track. Like, let's hit that, man. Let's go dark, man.
Not Good Enough for Truth, but just like a SoundCloud song. I could totally just like a dark wave
dude
song.
Yeah, what's the dark ballad on Situations or
on
Dying Is Your Latest Fashion?
Are you
what's
talking
that slow
about
song?
The Day I Left the Womb?
No, there's a slow song in the middle. No, not that one. It's called like My
Friends and Alibis.
No, it's right around there. It's a
slow song. Oh, My Apocalypse?
No, that's a jam though.
That's a top 20 maybe. That's in the conversation. Dude.
Oh my goodness.
We could do a whole podcast on
just that,
on that
one song.
You know, and damn it, listeners, I know I've been hearing about I've got some texts about the Avril Lavigne podcast. That is still
it's coming
in the works.
It's
gonna come. But I gotta say, Tyler, while we're here, there's definitely a Dying Is Your Latest Fashion podcast that also has to happen at one point. A retrospective on that. Because we're going through these bangers, like,
dude, that whole fucking record. It's Cellar Door.
Oh, Cellar Door. Okay, I was gonna throw one more honorable mention in before we got there, which was
Webs
We Weave.
Dude,
oh my god,
that riff! Jeez. That riff! The opening riff, oh my god.
Sets the tone, dude. Sets the tone.
He's so just self-aware and, like, transparent throughout that whole record.
The way he talks about coming down from drugs on My Apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's something, like, the line is, end transmission, the satellites are
down.
I've lost my high, basically. Mm-hmm. I need an earthquake to shake this pity off the ground. I just need, like, drugs and... sanity. I just need, you know what I mean? I need an earth. It's crazy, man. And then he goes into the screaming verse.
Yep.
And just goes into total paranoia. And you kind of hangs out dry during that guitar solo. Oh my god. This is a beautiful record, man.
Dude.
Like, you can hate on Ronnie Radke all you want, people. Dying Is Your Latest Fashion is a fucking scene classic.
Classic, dude. All the way.
So yeah, I guess the general question here is what's next for the band? I mean, like, are they gearing up for something big, do you think? I would tend to think so, because you don't spend this much money on a music video if it's not going to serve a larger purpose.
I have no idea, it's pure speculation, but like, I think we're going to get an album announcement, you know.
Yeah.
With probably the third chapter to this little saga that we've got going on right now. The video proves that there's something more coming. It's just a matter of time.
So, yeah, I mean, in general, do you like this stuff better than Coming Home? It's
like I don't like either of these two songs better than Hanging On.
Okay. I mean I would agree. I like Hanging On.
Come on, man. Okay. Come on. Remember
Hanging
the text messages, dude.
Hanging On is the best Falling in Reverse song since
I'd say it's the best Falling in Reverse song.
Oh, no. Not for me, man. I mean, I love Dying Is Really I love
There's no Drugging Me Is You was fun in the moment, but it does not stand up.
Okay. Drugging Me Is You. I love those songs. Fashionably Late, I love that. I love that album. Since Fashionably Late, I would say Hang On is the best Falling in Reverse song. I'd probably say that Losing My Mind is the second best Falling in Reverse song. So it's weird. You know what I mean?
So what is the best?
Let's get a fusion of those two, you know, going on.
No, dude, no. That would ruin Hanging On.
I mean, I don't know. There's a way. There's got to be a way they can do it.
Oh, man. What's your favorite song off Drugging Me Is You?
Oh man, I love that whole record, dude. I love the title track.
I don't think it's that good.
I love Tragic Magic. I love Pick Up the Phone. Holy shit.
Oh dude, I hated that song.
I love Good Girls, Bad Guys.
I mean, that's a jam.
I'm such a jam, dog. I love Alone. That's the next record.
I liked Goodbye Graceful. I thought that was...
I love that. I love Don't Mess With Ouija Boards. I love Raised by Wolves. Dude, Raised by Wolves. Dude, when that came... Dude, when that sing... As the lead, when that came out, we lost our collective minds. Because that is the most Dying Is Your Latest Fashion that record probably gets. And, dude,
sure.
We freaked out when that came out. Oh, my God. That song.
I thought they led with... Drug and Me Is You. I thought they looped with the title track. No?
No. Raised by Wolves, a snippet of it leaked, and they just dropped the whole thing.
I thought there was some video of Ronnie, like, inside some, like, girl's room, and he's just like, I'm back, and then he left.
Yeah, no. I mean, that was the official first video stuff, but Raised by Wolves was the first Falling Universe music we ever heard, you know, aside from the From Behind These Walls demo.
From Behind These Walls. Listeners, go check that out.
Which was actually an Escape the Fate, or not even, it was a pre-Escape the Fate B-side that Ronnie had that Elvis recorded for him.
If anyone hasn't heard those demos, go Google that shit, man. It's all out there.
Man, I kind of want to go jam Makeup now.
Oh, dude, I was listening to it the other day. Oh my God, what a great song. Like, how did that not make it on the record?
Dude, the guillotine? I mean,
arguably
the perfect post-hardcore song. Arguably. It's perfect. That chorus versus those screams in the verses. Oh, my goodness.
And the most ridiculous breakdown of all time.
Yes. And dude, the deep scream, the total, like, throat deep screams at the end. Yep. Oh, the growls. So good. Okay. Well, we'll save all this for the Dying's latest fashion retrospective, but we got to move on, Tyler. All
right.
And we got to talk about Paramore. Paramore.
Do we have to.
We do. We do, Tyler Sharp. We do. Paramore released a new music video for Caught in the Middle from their latest album, After Laughter. This is going to be the newest single from the album, following Rose Colored Boy, Fake Happy, Told You So, and Hard Times, none of which went anywhere at radio for the band. And I'm just going to come out and say this will not be the single to save this album, After Laughter. This is just, why are they even pushing this as a single? It just blows my mind, because this is one of the weaker songs on the record.
We said when the album came out, there was no song that could push to save this thing.
It's just like they're firing a fifth round, or you know what I mean? It's like, how many barrels do they have?
I think they just wanted to make some artsy, off the fucking wall, like, dissonant video that their, you know, old school Paramore fans would hate. Well, I think that was the goal.
I get that. It's almost like they're mad at the fans for not accepting. Why put it as a single to alt radio is my question.
They're pumping the gas, man. They're pumping the gas. I mean, I don't think this
is not going to do well on alt radio.
Not at all. I don't think they want it to go to radio. I think they just wanted to make some fucking artsy ass video. And the label was just like, we gotta have a fucking hit. Like, we gotta make something worthwhile off this.
Spend your money wisely, Atlantic Records. Like, you know what I mean? This is not gonna perform at radio. Tyler and I can tell you that. It's a boring song. If Hard Times, you know, or Fake Happy couldn't do it, this certainly can't do it. Let me tell you. Rose Colored Boy at least had, like, the low key no pressure part that's kind of catchy, and that, you know, that's just, it totally nosedived.
This video really pissed me off, man.
Yeah, it's more of that cheap retro '80s flair and the band just keep fucking doubling.
They are pumping the gas, man.
They're like, are we a band or are we painters? You don't
they're,
know. You
they're remaking them. All of their classics to fit this era, to fit the After Laughter era. Have you heard Crush, Crush, Crush as an After Laughter song? Oh my God, dude. It makes me want to throw up. It's terrible.
It's almost like they're trying to rewrite their history as who they are as
history,
a band.
It's revisionist history, dude. Yeah.
And here are the results. You know, this video only has 1.7 million views, which that's fucking light.
Terrible for Paramore.
Paramore are like a 50 million view plus kind of band. All of their hits have, you know, over 100 million views. Like, that's shameful for a Paramore video. And, you know, their record has barely sold over 100,000 copies, right? Dude. What's that, 160 or something at this point?
Yeah, it's right around there, somewhere there.
This is a band that used to go platinum. This is a band that used to go gold, you know, and they're suffering for it. They keep shoving this 80s retro hipster indie rock shit, you know, down their fans' throat, and their fans just don't want. I mean, the diehards.
Yeah, they have their diehard fans that are going to stick by them no matter what, who love this aesthetic, and that's fine, but you're going to do 25,000 first week next album.
But in general, I should not be bored watching a Paramore video. You know, Hayley Williams is one of the most visually arresting performers of our generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A Hayley Williams music video should be just the most entertaining thing, and this is not, because this whole aesthetic is just just get rid of it, man.
I felt like I was watching like some warped version of like fucking Reading Rainbow when I watched this video, man. Like, what is this, man?
It was pretty cool when they ran away from that grapefruit, right?
Yeah, I mean, what a time. Like, I'm sure there was some sort of hidden message there. Run away from your problems, man.
Haley.
What happened, dude?
Haley is like, yo, down with Ms. Biz, up with this. That is like Haley's whole narrative this year, man. And oh my goodness.
Dude, Ignorance came on a playlist I was listening to yesterday. Oh my god, man. Took me back, dude. That song hits so hard. It rips your face off.
Fuck with it. Like, and dude, and that was like,
what a record.
That record was tough when it came out. You know what I mean? That was like, we had to deal. It was a transition. You know?
But ultimately, still
you're
bangers.
Like, this is a really good record.
Yeah, totally.
It becomes a classic. And exactly. Even self-titled, you know, got its place on the Mount Rushmore of Paramore albums. And this one is just, it's unfortunate. But Tyler Sharp, I don't know. We have
all it takes is one piece of shit to ruin a career, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they can come back. It's just,
I don't think they want to do what it takes to come back.
They're going to have to come back as Paramore. If they want to come back, we need our rebel red-haired warrior back, you know, who makes us feel something. They're going to have to come back as Paramore. Not this shaky little freaking trite 80s total freaking contrived thing. They're going to have to come back as Paramore. All right, Tyler, let's move on.
Right.
So Blink-182, we're going to play a surprise set at Warped Tour, but they had to pull out because of Travis Barker's recent health issues, which we've been meaning to talk about on the show, but it's just we haven't gotten to it. He's had these blood clots in his arms, which is actually really fucking scary if you're a drummer, especially. I can't even imagine, but man, this would have been huge for the final Warped Tour.
Right, totally, dude. And I'm really mad that I forgot about this when we talked about Blink not playing Warped on our Warped Tour episode. You know, I kind of went in on him for a minute, and I completely forgot that Travis got diagnosed with these blood clots, and it looked like they had only the first report came out. And they had just canceled the two dates they had that weekend of their Las Vegas residency.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'm thinking, like, this is going to be serious when I saw that story. And I was like, I could see them canceling more dates in the future. Like, I could see this kind of being a thing that they need to step away from so Travis has some time to get past it. And sure as shit, like, Travis released a doctor's note saying that he can't play.
My man has to post a doctor's note.
Dude,
he can't
play until July.
That's fandom today. We need a doctor's note, yeah.
Right? Yeah,
Fandom has just gotten very toxic.
I know, dude. But we were
mad that Blink were going to play Warped Tour well before we knew Travis had any health issues. You know what I mean? That was a whole thing. Like, we, you know, Warped had basically said, Warped had this meltdown on Twitter, which I think was just Kevin Lyman behind the Warped account. And he basically blew Blink shit up and was like, yeah, they're not responding to our emails. They don't want to do the tour. But yeah, these health issues came in and this makes sense. And I just can't imagine how much this sucks for fucking Kevin, man. Like, dude, Kevin pulled off the impossible.
He did it. And kept this on.
I heard nothing. I had no clue.
I had no idea. I don't think anyone I knew had any idea either. So here's my thing. If Travis is able to get clear to play when he's scheduled to now, there's still a chance that they show up at a Warped Tour date.
Yeah, you know, it just, you know, Travis is not, blood clots in his arms, he's not going to fuck with that, you know?
Until he's officially cleared by doctors.
It really does depend on how his health goes, because he's not going to fuck around with it, I promise. If you're one of the best, he's the best drummer in the world. And if you are, you know,
you're the best
drummer in the world, you're not going to mess with your arms. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to see. And this is a guy who's been through a plane crash. You know what I mean? His health isn't exactly, you know, he can't take too many more hits, so to say. So if things go well for him, totally, I could see Blink hopping on to maybe the last day or something
like
that.
Could you imagine the last set of the last day of the last Warped Tour?
I could dream it. They played.
Dude,
it's just good to know that Kevin and the band hashed it out. after that little spat on Twitter.
Right, right.
And they worked something out. It's good to know that Blink had the best intentions here, and they were going to come back to Warped, because it felt like such a snub that they had nothing to do with it.
Man,
I mean, you know, I couldn't wait for the Summer at the Warped tour is a line in one of your biggest songs. And I mean, dude, this band, man, they first played the tour, what, in 96? I think
yeah.
that was their first. 96, dude, that was like, at that point, the tour was just like some RVs, like real,
right?
like campers, and like nobody was
Yep.
going, you know? Like,
Yeah,
they've really
fucking
been there from the beginning.
totally. Dude, if we find out somehow, if it happens that they're playing the final date of the final Warped Tour, I think we have to go.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah,
think we
totally. Yeah.
have to go.
I'm going to have my ear to my
If
Warped
we
Tour
somehow
sources.
find out that that's real.
I'm going to start shaking down my Warped Tour sources way more, because apparently I wasn't doing a good enough job.
Right?
I didn't hear anything
Same.
about
I
this. I'm going to
know.
start yelling at people like, yo, you
Yo.
know something about that Blink?
What's good on those special guests
Yeah.
this year,
What's
man?
good? And that's the thing, is this opens the door up. You know, there could be other special
Exactly.
guests planned for Warped Tour. And this Warped Tour already is going really good.
Dude, people are fucking showing out, dude. So,
So,
we're flying out if we find anything out, man.
okay. More important than Blink, this Blink almost playing Warped Tour is Funko Pop toys are coming out of Blink-182. But
But
so they only are releasing toys, and correct me if I'm wrong, of Mark and Travis, right?
that's it.
That's not Blink-182, you know?
No
If you're gonna
Skiva.
release When a band gets their own Funko Pop toys, which, okay, first off, do you own any of these things, Tyler?
I do not.
Okay, I don't
I've They've
either. I
never
don't
been
get
for
it, but
me.
I
I
know
don't
people
either.
who are fucking psychos about these
Right?
things.
Yep.
It's crazy the amount of money people
Same.
spend on them. I have lots of friends who they've got them all, and I'm just like, wow. But when you put a set out for a whole band, you do the whole band.
You do the
And
whole band, right?
I get it why you don't do Tom, but like, if you're not gonna do Tom, if you're not gonna put out a Tom toy, why not put out a Skiba toy, you know?
You have to. Like,
You
that's.
have to.
This makes it seem like he's not a member of the band.
Right, totally.
And
And
I can't believe that it, like, action figures are making this conversation happen. Is Matt Skiba really a member of
right.
Blink-182? Like, that should be the headline everyone ran with because of this.
It's almost like, yeah, it's almost like you wonder if like the Funko Pop company was like scared of Tom, you know?
Oh my
Like,
God. Or there
but
was
it's.
just some bro there who was at the top, and he was like,
And here.
no, Skiba is not a member of Blink-182. If it's
Oh,
not
like
Tom, we're not fucking
a
doing
really big Blink fan. It's like, no, I'm not
it.
about this Skiba shit. Yeah. I could
Yeah.
totally see it. It's so weird just to see two figures come out for a band that have always been a three piece, you know? And if you're not gonna go the Skiba route, you kind of have to go the Tom route, like the
You
classic
gotta
lineup. You know what I
pick,
mean? This
right?
these are superheroes to us. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like a comic book almost. These are just first off, a Tom DeLonge like 2003 Funko Pop figure would be the coolest looking one ever, right? With the lip
Right?
ring,
The lip
black
ring,
hair.
emo hair.
Yeah,
Yup.
he'd be so cool. It'd be such a cool. I might have to go buy that, yo. Like if that came out,
If that ever happened.
I might have to cop that.
You think there were some rare pressings pressed? Like, you think there's
Oh
like
my God.
five that exists of Tom?
Oh my God, dude, that'd be pretty coveted amongst the Blink fandom.
Right, man. Yeah, it was so funny how much
I know.
conversation this created.
At Skip, I believe, still has not tweeted since 2014, so we don't know his opinion on this. But isn't he's doing shit with Trio now, right? Like,
Dude, they're going on fucking tour, man. I'm about to hit that up.
really?
Yeah, man. Like, this is a whole rabbit hole, but my favorite Trio record is Agony and Irony, because, you know.
What's the biggest Trio song? What's the big one?
Mercy Me.
What's the other big one?
Shit, dude. I mean, I love Stupid Kid. That's probably the biggest classic.
That their bit, like their mo. If you were to look at their Spotify,
No,
what's the
Mercy
most
Me is
streamed?
the top one on Spotify.
Okay.
I just listened to it last night. But there's another one. I
Which
think
record
it's
is that
might be
off of?
called Ride. I should know this. I don't know. I'm looking it up right now.
Off the Crimson?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was. I loved Agony and Irony. Help Me, Calling All Skeletons, I Found a Way. That record's a fucking banger. From Here to Infirmary has Stupid Kid and Private Eye. I love Private Eye. But,
Oh, Time to Waste was a big one back in
Time
the
to
day. That's what
Waste.
I was
That was the
thinking of.
other one I was thinking
Like,
of.
during the post-hardcore emo boom of the mid-2000s, that song was kind of a staple. Like, it was
Totally.
just a very emo chorus, you know? And That was, I never really interacted much with the band, but I was kind of about that song.
That one was never for me. I liked their hooks, that's for sure. I'm such a shallow fan. I'm a very shallow Trio fan for sure.
Blink also dropped a ska version of Can't Get You More Pregnant. I don't think we need to talk about that.
I didn't listen to it, so.
Yeah, it's not. Okay. All right, let's move on, Tyler Sharp, to our pop story. Drizzy, Drake. Dude. Is in the house.
It's a surgical summer, man.
Surgical Summer Part 2. Here we are. Drake has released his 25-song album, Scorpion. This is following a pretty good run of singles for Drake, with Nice For What, you know, with the infamous Lauryn Hill sample, which is just crushing it at radio, and God's Plan, which also crushed it at radio.
God's
so
Plan.
Drake's had an interesting lead up to this record, including the rap battle with Pusha T, where he just got totally lit on fire and destroyed.
Decimated.
And we talked about this on the podcast. He ultimately made the right move, which was to remove himself from the situation.
Not address it.
And just kind of continue being Drake. But so now that the record is out, Tyler, I mean, it's 25 songs. So I don't want us to get too deep into it. But, you know, what are your thoughts on this record?
25 songs, man. That's my thoughts on this record. Yeah. Dude. That's my thoughts, man. So I listened to this thing 2 times front to back. And holy shit, what a workout that was, man. Like, that takes dedication right there. I woke up Friday morning because I didn't wait for it. I was so fucking tired Friday night. And I knew that it was going to be 25 songs. So I just waited for the morning. First thing I did was just press play, listen through it all the way through, revisited it on Saturday. Oh, man, there is a whole shit ton of filler on this album. Mm-hmm. Like, a ridiculous amount. Just, he could have made this thing 7 songs, no problem.
Yeah.
Like, yay length. He's very defiant on this record. Like, he really, and Drake has always been this way, but he just pumped the gas hard, obviously, after being completely decimated by Pusha. But he feels the need to justify everything he's ever done now. And you hear it on every single song. He's trying to make himself sound worthy.
He's upset.
He is very upset. He's very upset.
I gotta just admit real quick, I'm Upset has been stuck in my head for some reason.
Listen.
I've been walking around saying, I'm upset. And I don't know if it was like because I listened to the record, but right. that happened to me.
So I listened, when I'm Upset came out as a single, I listened to it and I was like, I don't like this, but I know I'm gonna like it in the future. Like, I know this thing's gonna grow on me. I can feel it. And it has. Like, that's definitely one of my faves off the record. But Nonstop. That's the standout. Seems like it is with streaming. I feel like it comes in with a hard beat. Kind of typical Drake flow, like not anything overly special, but I feel like he really delivers on it. I don't think that the Michael Jackson sample is good. And that is the song that has been getting the full push, but Nonstop has more streams on it because I think that's just simply the better song. I think the Michael Jackson sample misses and it feels very random. Like, why do that? The Jay-Z feature. Wow. Jay-Z comes in hard on that verse. He's name dropping X. He's just,
let me play that specific line. He says X is dead and George Zimmerman is still alive. And he basically says, the fucking streets are dead. You know, the streets Jay-Z's coming from. He's like, you're going to kill XXXTentacion, the rapper who recently died. You know, but George Zimmerman, who shot Trayvon Martin, is still alive. He's like, you know, if you guys are really so tough in the streets, like, the fuck are you doing? You know, you're killing our good rappers and letting murderers get away. So it's a very interesting line from Jay to sort of just brush the streets off like that. He's like, the streets are dead.
Right. And, you know,
Basically saying, you petty little kids, you're right. Shooting each other.
Right. Yeah. If X didn't pass away, I don't think we would have got that line. And that's another thing that I think is worth mentioning, that, you know, I don't have proof other than just lyrical content of him addressing his child multiple times.
He gets into it.
The line, you know, the line was the first time he addresses on the album, he says something along the lines of, I didn't hide the world from my child. I was hiding my child from the world. Like, that was that's kind of his first excuse, I guess you could say, for his actions. And then he addresses him on March 14th, which is the closer. And this record, there's just so much nonsense on it. Ratchet, Happy so Birthday, like, Blue Tint. Like, I did like Mob Ties. I'm just going through them, like, 8 out of 10. Sandra's Rose, Is There More? These songs just are absolutely terrible.
So let's wrap up with your final thought, and then we'll go through some of this stuff together. I'll give my thoughts, and then we'll go through some of this stuff together.
Cool.
Where are you at with the record?
Completely overdone. 75% of this record is 100% unnecessary. I'm at a 5 out of 10.
Okay. Man, I found this record overall to be so monotone,
mm-hmm.
So unremarkable, mm-hmm. and so fucking bloated. Like, the 25-song thing. Dude, I swear to God, this record, I know you said it was like a chore to listen to. Dude, if it took me a week to listen to this record, like, I would start it in the car on the way to work, and like, I wouldn't finish it by the time I got to work, so then I'd lose which song I left off on, so I'd start over again. I just kept fucking starting this record over again. I couldn't escape it, dude, and I don't think I finished it until like the other day. And It took so much to get through. And you made a good point saying that, you know, go yay style and just do 7 songs. Because I think if you cut out, 17 songs from this record, you might have something good here.
Dude,
you know what I mean?
7 tracks, man. That's all you need.
I'm with you. Nonstop is one of my favorites. But I'll use favorite lightly. Like, I don't think it's a super exceptional song.
Right.
I just think it's an okay Drake song.
Mm-hmm.
I like Summer Games. It was kind of the weird...
Okay.
It's kind of the wild card on the record. The most, like, electronic sort of synth core you really get here. Don't Matter to Me with MJ, I thought it was okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But I like some of the dark vibes on it. But I just thought it was okay. And that's ultimately where I come at.
Right.
I come to with the Drake songs I do like. Nonstop, Summer Games, Don't Matter to Me. These are just okay songs. To me, none of these songs touch Nice for What or God's Plan.
Nice for What's the best song on the whole record.
Yeah, and God's Plan is probably the second best song.
Probably second, yep.
I mean, the first two singles are the best thing. I mean, you might even say I'm Upset is the third best song on the record. I don't know.
I mean, it's up there, top five.
There's not much here. This album is very, very melancholy. It's just very, like, bare bones. Like, there's not a lot of...
The beats
flexes.
Are so lackluster, man.
Yeah, it's so basic. And just like that album cover is like black and white, and it's just kind of had this album feels so unremarkable and unspecial. Reminds me of that Last Weekend project that came out.
Right.
What was it? Dear Melancholy?
Yep.
That's kind of what it reminds me of. And that MJ song, it almost sounded like The Weeknd was singing. And I got that vibe. And that Weekend project was so just middle of the road. And that's what this feels like to me. I'm at a 5.9 out of 10 for the album.
Okay.
That's ultimately where probably am going to drop to like a 5.5 out of 10 ultimately. But that's where I come to.
Do you think if it wasn't for the Pusha call out, would we have got a different record?
Obviously some of these songs were tweaked. And to go back to the addressing his son thing, and one of the songs towards the end, he's straight up talking to his son on the song. I forget what it is.
It's March 14th.
Yeah, he's just... I think the bulk of this record was done. Because when you listen to I'm Upset, the rest of this record, you know, which is a song he dropped before the Pusha attacked him,
mm-hmm.
the bulk of this record feels in the mode and in the mood of that song, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, definitely.
Not very... wild. They're not very sort of ecstatic, very just monotone and dark and just kind of one note. And so I don't think the record changed that much from the Pusha. I think, you know, 22 of these songs were already ready and probably stayed the same. Interestingly, After Dark, the song has Static Major on it, who is dead. Static Major's dead, but just a little piece of trivia, he sang the hook on Lil Wayne's Lollipop. So that's one of the all-time hip-hop hooks. So I thought that was very interesting of Drake to include him on the record.
Totally. That song also has Ty Dolla $ign on it.
Yep. Yep, Ty Dolla Sign, the most industry plant. I'm gonna be on everybody's record, on everybody's single.
Yeah,
guys, it's funny. I started off really liking Ty Dolla Sign, but I don't know. He's kind of getting a little overexposed. I feel like,
I mean,
he got to
like,
be on everybody's project,
right? And he just hasn't
had
that.
Shouts to him for dating the Fifth Harmony girl. I mean, shouts, right?
Shouts, man. He just hasn't had that one. That, yeah. I mean, he's got
really
songs, but
he like
just...
Baby, that was a jam. And
yeah,
like, Saved, I Ain't Gonna Save You, like, were you singing to the girl? I mean, his early stuff was very jammy, but he's gotta do his own thing, I think, you know?
Yeah, like, his biggest song is the feature on Swalla, right? With Nicki. Like, that's his biggest moment.
I would say it's the Fifth Harmony feature, Work From Home.
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure.
Swalla was more of a club thing than a radio thing.
For sure. I mean, Swalla's got 614 million streams on Spotify.
Big club hit.
Yeah. So
we got to get into first week sales, Tyler.
Dude, we got a disappointment coming in, I think.
Yeah, so, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tyler, if you read any updates, but it seems like the projections have them coming in around 750,000 first week total.
Between 750 and 8, yeah.
Okay, so that's, you know what? He's breaking all the streaming records, right? He's winning all the Spotify streams. He's winning all the Apple Music streams. But ultimately, his album sales have dropped, his iTunes sales, his physical media sales have dropped to a point where the streaming sales are not keeping pace with that drop. And we have a big upset here. I mean, views sold over 1 million copies first week.
1.06.
This is a quarter of 1 million records less we're talking about that he's selling here. That's crazy. I mean, that is a big disappointment.
Absolutely. I was, you know, in the week leading up to it, it truly, Hits Daily Double put it best. Like, it truly felt like history in the making here. I thought he was going to do over 1.2 million and he was going to do better than the Taylor Swift record, but he's not even going to come close.
And that was a big question here was like, ultimately, who's the biggest artist in America, right?
Right.
Taylor Swift or Drake? And you start thinking about it, Taylor on a what most fans thought was a bad record. I love that record, but most people hated that record that didn't have strong singles. Taylor still can come out and do over 1 million, no problem, you know, and Taylor can play stadiums. I don't know that Drake can play stadiums. And here's Drake and coming out now and taking a big dive off of what he sold with views, which was over 1 million copies. And this was supposed to be, you know, this was supposed to be it, you know, this was supposed to be the record.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the pinnacle. And did you hear the rumors at all? So there was this post on Reddit that someone sent an email into Spotify complaining that he's paying for premium. So premium on Spotify means no ads. He claimed that the overpromotion of Drake acted as an advertisement, and supposedly he got his month refunded by Spotify.
Good for him.
Dude, if you're gonna do it for one, like, where's my refund?
Okay, so yeah, it's and what I think this is, man, I think we've reached peak Drake.
This is it.
I think and I'm not saying he's coming down, right?
Sure.
But I think views was the peak. And this is the plateau.
Absolutely.
And I think it's all downhill from here.
So the question is, how much did the call-out track have to do with the performance of this record? Was it the call-out track, or was it the oversaturation of filler?
It's the oversaturation of filler and the oversaturation of Drake in the marketplace in general.
Okay.
Views was just a lot to handle, right?
Right.
I mean, there were holy shit.
Right.
Those songs, One Dance, being played every
biggest song ever.
Hotline Bling, being played every 5 minutes. That's a tough thing to take.
Right.
And then, you know, but after that, he dropped More Life. You know, he did the fucking mixtape with Future.
Mm-hmm.
Drake has just been so overexposed, so everywhere that I think oversaturation of the market played a big part here. And the fact that he's not doing anything particularly special on this record. Like, Hotline Bling, you think about that song, at least it's, like, exciting.
Right.
High School What? It's so exciting.
Right.
God's Plan is so feel-good. And there's just nothing, there's really nothing here for anyone on this record.
Monotone's a great word for this record.
Yeah. And when you think about his career, I mean, Drake's been I'd say he kind of arrived in 09, and 2011 is when he really stepped in and sort of was like, I'm number one, you know?
Right.
It's kind of when he really, with Take Care, is really where he kind of came in and became, like, the biggest rapper, you know, alongside Kendrick, you could say. But it's at this point now that it's been 10 years, you know? He's had 10 years on the throne. It's kind of ready for somebody else to become the biggest rapper. You could see it happening.
Totally. Yeah. Who's it going to be, man? Is it Post?
Nah, man. Post is going to be like the next Kid Rock or something.
Oh, my gosh, man. Oh, my goodness. What a hot take. Post Malone, the next Post Kid Rock. Someone needs to write that.
I hope he doesn't do that because I really enjoy those Post Malone songs.
Dude, I saw that all caps paranoia chorus text the other day, man.
I will randomly text Tyler Sharp all caps Post Malone lyrics. It's
dude,
a thing.
Yep. Dude, hook's a hook, man. Kills it.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you want to say about Drake, Tyler? Other than, I mean, we're disappointed by the sales. We're disappointed by the record. I think we've reached peak Drake.
Yeah, we're on the come down now.
Okay, cool. Before we go, Tyler, let's hit some Warped Tour news really quickly. Because a bunch of things happen at Warped. So, All Time Low played Everything Is Fine at Warped Tour. They had a pretty good set. People were really happy to see them, but really quickly, this song Everything Is Fine, this single, what do you think of it?
Pile of trash.
I agree with
like you. You want some short response, just hashtag pile of trash, man. Start that shit trending. It is a it feels so uninspired. It feels like such a call-in, and like these are Lucy's that they're dropping, you know?
Yes.
Like this is supposed to be some sort of innovation, some sort of breakaway from the monotony of All Time Low, and this feels like the most phoned in bullshit, almost like a new wave main ripoff, Black Butterflies and Deja Vu, poor man's version of just some fucking, oh my god, dude.
I mean, you can say that.
Someone
I was
needs
just gonna
to
say it
cancel.
Sounds like it sounds like bad Jonas Brothers. Like that was
oh,
mine.
Dude,
bad Jonas
I mean, there
Brothers.
You go.
That's
there
where
you
I came
go.
To. Like,
there you go.
So it's a super boring song, right? But they still, you know, it was nice to see them at least like have a good Warped Tour set, and people like seemed happy to see them. But what's weird is like there's this narrative that we're going to talk about that's being established with the band, and this is this thing. I saw this some kid fucking say this on like YouTube. He's like, this is the best thing the band's put out since Future Heart, hell yeah. And I'm like, well, like, that's
since
not saying
Future
much
Heart?
Yeah. Since
dude Future we're Heart, not we doing this again. We are not but, doing this bad All Time Low album
about.
Rebound again.
I'm like you, this is the best thing they put out since one record ago? Like, that's not necessarily a good thing, you know, kid. And everyone's kind of saying how this is more of, like, it's a more of a pop-punk song than Last Young Renegade, you know? And I'm like,
it's such
well,
fucking
yeah, but it doesn't mean it's good just because it's more in that direction. I mean, this feels more like Disney punk to me.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like,
this is Sunnyside cop out late 2000s pop punk bullshit that's like just dumbed down to oh my god, dude, this song pissed me off so much. It's ridiculous. And thematically, like, it's such a cop out. Like it's nihilistic millennial Twitter. Everything's fine and nothing matters. Holy shit, Alex, you should get a fucking like Pulitzer Prize for that one.
What is your score, Tyler, on this song?
I'm at a 4 out of 10.
Okay, I'm at a 5.5 out of 10. Okay, so Birthday Song is another single they dropped.
We don't have to talk about this one.
Just real quick, because we're on the subject All Time Low, I want to get it out of the way so we don't get emails, okay? the band are trying to be fun again. Like, this is the narrative that's coming around this. They're trying.
No.
We're a fun band again. That's what they're trying to do. We're a fun band.
Nope.
And again, this song is, it's more like Disney punk again. It's weird, too, because did you see how they rolled this song out? They sent it to a fan.
Yeah, they're trying
it was her
to be,
birthday.
Like, all...
but the lyrics in the song, it's a very sexual song. The chorus is, like, I want you in the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent this to a girl fan. It's like, what? Like, that was just not the most, like... on brand
they didn't think that one through very
yeah
hard,
it was just it was a little weird to me. I mean, not a big deal. I know the band aren't creeps, like I get it. I mean, it's kind of weird that you have bras thrown at you on stage from your fan,
like,
your
you
underage fans.
Talk about
but,
something that made me
yeah.
uncomfortable back in the day. That made me uncomfortable
yeah
back
that
in the
I was
day.
never I was always like why aren't we it wasn't like I was like, why aren't we talking about this more? But I was like, why is this going
Why
on?
is this okay?
Why is it weird?
Yeah.
But this is the narrative that the band are trying to establish, that they're a more fun band now. And did you see the Billboard interview that Alex did?
I did not.
He says straight up, this is the end of the last Young Renegade era.
Oh,
It's
I saw
over.
that
Like,
headline.
holy shit. Like, you can't do it, man.
Dude,
They're trying to pivot way too fast, and it's not gonna work, and they're pivoting with subpar material.
we called it when the album dropped last year. We led w a whole episode with how bad the all-time low record was, and like we said it, you know, that this cycle will not last long. The pivot will come because this is so bad. It's gonna underperform, which it has. It's crawled through the mud. That's what Last Young Renegades did. And now we're fucking back at, you know, where we were post Dirty Work cycle. We're gonna get another fucking Don't Panic record. Only it's gonna be, like you said, Sunnyside, you know, poor man's Disney pop
Poor
punk,
man's
man.
Disney punk, right? Bad Jonas Brothers. So
I'm not
it's
doing this
just
again
crazy
with this
we're here
band.
again.
No, I'm not doing this again.
Dude, I gotta say though, I'm excited for the note to scene conversations to come. Oh my God, because getting through Last Young Renegade on this podcast was one of the more challenging things in our friendship. Like, just not that we were in agreement that it sucked, but having to talk about it and having to air it out on the podcast was like physically draining every week going through that record. So I don't know, man. I'm kind of stoked for the electric conversation we're gonna have. It might get heated when this new all-time low, this like you said, Don't Panic Part Two that we're inevitably gonna get, where they're like, hey, look, we're a pop punk band again. Our major label, oh my god, it's all happening again, Tyler. Their major label pop record failed, and they're going, oh my god, they're probably gonna sign with
They're gonna
Hopeless.
sign
Oh
to
my
Hopeless
god.
again. They're gonna go back to fucking
All
Hopeless
right.
Records. I'm done. I'm gonna chuck this microphone,
Did
man.
you see Taking Back Sunday's Warped Tour set?
I did bits and pieces. I saw Cute Without the E.
I thought it was an okay set. They played Make Damn Sure, Cute Without the E, Decade Under the
The
Influence. You know,
hits.
you gotta play the hits, right? Shouts to the boys for playing the hits. But man, I got kind of sad.
I don't know what you were sad about. I didn't. I just thought Adam was off.
Yeah, I mean,
he
he did.
threw me off, man. Like, it's just like, man, this band just, I don't think this band's got it anymore.
Like
I
I
mean, like,
said,
I
it was
know this
just
band
an.
hasn't had it for a long time, but like, they really don't have it, man.
Like I said, it was just an okay performance. It wasn't anything special. But seeing the band up there, I just got kind of sad. Like, it was weird. It was like watching the band fade away on stage, because this band is so
Like their
representative of.
album sales? Yeah.
This band is so representative of what made this music scene great. You know what I mean? Like,
Totally.
during the peak, you know, 2006, post-hardcore emo. Taking Back Sunday were on the radio. Taking Back Sunday were touring with Blink. Taking Back Sunday were on Jimmy Kimmel. Taking Back Sunday were one of the biggest bands in the scene. And although I was more of a Brand New fan, if you want to get into that rivalry, I loved Taking Back Sunday and I loved their songs. So I just got this weird, like, sense. Watching Taking Back Sunday playing the last Warped Tour just gave me this weird sense of like nostalgia and dread. Just seeing what we're losing, you know, with Warped Tour going away. Just fucking sucks, man.
I mean, yeah, it definitely sucks. For Taking Back Sunday, though, it didn't hurt me as hard just because I know that this band has been gone for at least 10 years now. You
Just
know, like.
watching like the golden age on stage and fading away as Warped Tour dies, it just like was like, ugh, another gut shot.
Yeah, nothing.
Like, we made a
Yeah.
mistake, guys. I'm just saying, like, we made a mistake
You're never gonna get this back.
letting this thing go, this great music scene we
I
had.
had a
We made a
friend,
mistake.
dude. I had a friend text me a couple days after we posted the Warped Tour episode. He was just like, "Your podcast makes me really depressed,
I'm just saying, I. Bro, we made a mistake. We had something really special going, and we let it go. But I mean, I just like I think back. I spent a summer listening to Make Damn Sure. That was like the song of the summer, man.
Dude, that gasp of breath that he takes right before the song kicks in and Make Damn Sure.
Oh
That's
my
like,
God,
dude, the tension that builds.
dude, the bridge. I'm gonna like when he gets all intense. It's just That was the song of the summer, man. I mean, I remember like a particular girlfriend of mine, when that song came out, we were, that was kind of our song. And it was a weird song to have, you know, like be our song, because the lyrics are, I'm going to make damn sure that you can't ever leave. And we used to joke about that.
Yeah.
But man, I just have good memories. Like, so dude, that's why I got sad.
Yeah. That song is like emo tension through the eye of a needle, man. There's just, they build it so well, and it just explodes in the best way in that chorus.
Okay, so a couple more Warped Tour stories to hit real quick. So Victory Records band Islander were kicked off Warped Tour their first day of the tour because the singer broke a drum kit on set.
Oh,
what do you know? What do you know about this?
Lyman is not fucking around this year, man. And this band has, this is the most press this band has pretty much ever gotten, other than the fact that they've opened up for Korn like 8,000 times and their band has gone absolutely nowhere. I'm pretty sure Victory dropped them. They're indie now.
Oh, okay. That is a sad thing to say. When you get dropped by Victory,
when you get dropped by Victory. And...
Let me tell you, Victory ain't got a lot going for it now. And there was this time when these boys were the flagship band for Victory. Like, they were like, yo,
getting the full
Islander
push.
And what's Islander and Broadside are the fucking future of music.
Dude,
nope.
Islander's the next Deftones. Like, get the fuck out of here, man. So he damaged a backline drum kit. They were playing the fucking Full Sail stage. They were losing it to about 20 kids. And, yeah, he broke, like, a tom. It was a floor tom, and he dove into the drum kit, and it busted it. And I heard, saw comments online, conversation. He was being a complete dick to security, and he was being difficult to work with leading up to that moment throughout the day. I don't know if that is what happened. The band released a statement.
Then, it's a video. Did you watch the video?
Yeah, I watched the video. Yeah, he gets up on top of like the speaker stack on the side of the stage, and then at the very end, he just throws himself into the drum kit. Very, very punk rock, man.
They put a Facebook video out apologizing, and I thought they handled it with pretty classy. Like, I mean, they weren't mad, you know. They were apologetic, and
I mean, they offered.
They were very civil.
They offered to pay for it, and like, the tour was just like, no. Like,
well, that's the thing is this, to me, for this type of incident on Warped Tour, knowing my whole history with Warped Tour, this seems like very severe punishment. Like, this is
absolutely, it was
insane.
Way over the top. Way
to kick
over
a band
top.
Off the tour for something this minor. I mean, wait, dog, bands have torn down entire stages.
Totally.
Like there's been crazy shit too. So I kind of think, like you said, it wasn't really about this. Like, it could have been about what you said, or it could have been, you know, think about this band. Nobody's ever wanted to talk about Islander. If we ever did, like when we were at AP, it was because they were being shoved down our fucking throat by Victory, you know? And Kev probably didn't even want this band on the tour to begin with. And, you know, I bet you Kev was just like, you know, this is an easy excuse to get rid of this shitty band that we don't want.
Give me one excuse, man. That's all I'm looking for.
They
seem
like perfectly nice guys, and I have no ill will towards them, you know? And I agree, I think the punishment was crazy, but, you know, people just really haven't wanted Islander. That we just, there's no interest there.
Yeah, so they've got the full push. They should have been such a bigger band than they were, and now they're just, they're playing the full fucking Full Sail stage. There's no hype around this band. And they released a second statement earlier today. They are fully capitalizing on this thing, man. Did you see the second statement?
No, I didn't. I thought they just apologized.
Oh, no, they re-apologized, man. They are doubling down on that apology.
Okay. All right,
It is the full press cycle now, man.
Okay, so Water Parks on the tour covered No Doubt's Hella Good. Easy to forget how big of a single that was for No Doubt and how it was everywhere.
Easy to forget how big No Doubt were.
Yeah, and No Doubt, I mean, massive. They have a diamond record. Their Tragic record has sold 10 million copies. That's insane. You know, that puts them in league with Nirvana and Linkin Park. But, and it's also easy to assume that that's just a Gwen Stefani song. Because you could just totally make that mistake. But it's actually a No Doubt song. I like this. I think it's a good move for Water Parks. Like, No Doubt is a band that came up on these stages. You know what I mean? They came out, you know, Gwen was a Warped Tour staple. You know, she cut her teeth on Warped Tour. And I like seeing Water Parks cover this song. I like Austin adding the screams and the aggression to a pop song. It makes it kind of fun. How about you?
I mean, I agree to an extent, but no Water Parks fan knows this song. So from like a PR standpoint, it's kind of a bad move, but it was fine. You know, it was fine. Nothing overly special. I would love to see Water Parks cover My Chemical Romance with Mikey. Wouldn't that be a
Mikey's
moment?
Gone.
Wouldn't that?
Mike,
oh,
Mikey peaced out after like two shows.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that would have been a moment. Mikey Way,
I like this.
With Water Parks covering My Chemical Romance. I mean, this is fine. It's whatever.
I really like this. I gotta back the band here.
Right,
you know, my guys had a tough time, you know, last week with the first day of the tour. Okay, you know, and I especially think this cover was a lot better than this next band we're gonna talk about. Haley and Royale, who are on the tour for reasons, covered My Chemical Romance's "Teenagers," and I mean.
I don't, dude.
Did you hear that guitar riff? And did you hear the echo on his mic? They are like, it's like we are from the 70s. Like we are a 70s rock band in an arena. Like what is that echo effect on that mic? That is ridiculous.
Johnny Depcore needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
At all costs. This needs to be stopped. This band could not. I don't know how this band still exists. This song sounds like it was played by a, you know, middle school talent show band, and they've been playing this song as a cover for as early as I found back, like last November.
Yeah.
It still sounds like shit, and this band needs to go away. Like
it sounded pretty bad, but I couldn't, to be fair to the band, I couldn't hear much of the song over all of
over,
the girls screaming,
yes,
the lyrics,
the crowd
the
yes.
crowd, just they know all those lyrics and they're gonna scream them at the top of their lungs. Before we go, Tyler, I just want to really quickly give shouts to Made a Parade for covering Punk Rock Princess by Something Corporate. Because
I knew you were going to say something about
just
that,
shouts.
Man.
That's all.
I knew
just
you were going to say something about that. All right.
All right. Well, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions for us, write into noteseen@gmail.com, and we will happily talk about your question on the show. If you enjoy this podcast, please, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars and we will love you. Until then, see you next week.